Chapter 14, Some Unfortunate Stories. By this time, I had made the acquaintance of the greater number of the 45 women in Hall 6. Let me introduce a few. Louise, the pretty German girl who I have spoken of formally as being sick with fever, had the delusion that the spirits of her dead parents were with her. "I have gotten many beatings from Miss Grady and her assistants," she said, "and I am unable to eat the horrible food they give us. I ought not to be compelled to freeze for want of proper clothing. Oh, I pray nightly that I might be taken to my papa and mama." One night, when I was confined at Bellevue, Dr. Field came. I was in bed and weary of the examination. At last I said, "I'm tired of this. I will talk no more." "Won't you?" he said angrily. "I'll see if I can make you." With this, he laid his crutch on the side of the bed, and getting up on it, he pinched me very severely in the ribs. I jumped up straight in bed and said, "What do you mean by this?" "I want to teach you to obey when I speak to you," he replied. "If I could only die and go to Papa." When I left, she was confined to bed with a fever, and maybe by this time she has her wish. There is a French woman confined in Hall 6, or was during my stay, whom I firmly believe to be perfectly sane. I watched her and talked with her every day, excepting the last three, and I was unable to find any delusion or mania in her. Her name is Josephine Despreau, if that is spelled correctly, and her husband and all her friends are in France. Josephine feels her position keenly. Her lips tremble and she breaks down crying when she talks of her helpless condition. "How did you get here?" I asked. One morning, as I was trying to get breakfast, I grew deathly sick, and two officers were called in by the woman of the house, and I was taken to the station house. I was unable to understand their proceedings, and they paid little attention to my story. Doings in this country were new to me, and before I realized it, I was lodged as an insane woman in this asylum. When I first came, I cried that I was there without hope of release, and for crying, Miss Grady and her assistants choked me until they hurt my throat, for it has been sore ever since. A pretty young Hebrew woman spoke so little English I could not get her story except as told by the nurses. They say her name is Sarah Fishbaum, and that her husband put her in the asylum because she had a fondness for other men than himself. Granting that Sarah was insane, and about men, let me tell you how the nurses tried to cure her. They would call her up and say, "Sarah, wouldn't you like to have a nice young man?" "Oh, yes, a young man is all right," Sarah would reply in her few English words. "Well, Sarah, wouldn't you like us to speak a good word to some of the doctors for you? Wouldn't you like to have one of the doctors?" And then they would ask her which doctor she preferred and advise her to make advances to him when he visited the hall. I had been watching and talking with a fair-complexioned woman for several days, and I was at a loss to see why she had been sent there. She was so sane. "Why did you come here?" I asked her one day after we'd indulged in a long conversation. "I was sick," she replied. "Are you sick mentally?" I urged. "Oh no, what gave you such an idea?" "I'd been overworking myself, and I broke down. Having some family trouble and being penniless and nowhere to go, I applied to the commissioners to be sent to the poorhouse until I would be able to work." "But they do not send poor people here unless they are insane," I said. "Don't you know there are only insane women, or those supposed to be so, sent here?" I knew after I got here that the majority of these women were insane, but then I believed them when they told me this place was the place they sent all the poor who applied for aid as I had done. "How have you been treated?" I asked. "Well, so far I've escaped a beating, although I have been sickened at the sight of many and the recital of more. When I was brought here, they went to give me a bath, and the very disease for which I needed doctoring, and from which I was suffering, made it necessary that I should not bathe. But they put me in, and my sufferings were increased greatly for weeks thereafter. A Mrs. McCartney, whose husband is a tailor, seems perfectly rational and has not one fancy. Mary Hughes and Mrs. Louise Shands showed no obvious traces of insanity. One day, two newcomers were added to our list. The one was an idiot, Carrie Glass, and the other was a nice-looking German girl. Quite young, she seemed, and when she came in, all the patients spoke of her nice appearance and apparent sanity. Her name was Margaret. She told me she'd been a cook and was extremely neat. One day, after she had scrubbed the kitchen floor, the chambermaids came down and deliberately soiled it. Her temper was aroused and she began to quarrel with them. An officer was called and she was taken to the asylum. "How can they say I am insane, merely because I allowed my temper to run away with me?" she complained. "Other people not shut up for crazy when they get angry? I suppose the only thing to do is to keep quiet and so avoid the beatings which I see others get. No one can say one word about me. I do everything I'm told, all the work they give me. I am obedient in every respect, and I do everything to prove to them that I am sane." One day, an insane woman was brought in. She was noisy, and Miss Grady gave her a beating and blacked her eye. When the doctors noticed it and asked if it was done before she came there, the nurses said it was. While I was in Hall 6, I never heard the nurses address the patients except to scold or yell at them, unless it was to tease them. They spent much of their time gossiping about the physicians and about the other nurses in a manner that was not elevating. Miss Grady nearly always interspersed her conversation with profane language, and generally began her sentences by calling on the name of the Lord. The names she called the patients were of the lowest and most profane type. One evening she quarreled with another nurse while we were at supper about the bread, and when the nurse had gone out, she called her bad names and made ugly remarks about her. In the evenings, a woman, whom I supposed to be head cook for the doctors, used to come up and bring raisins, grapes, apples, and crackers to the nurses. Imagine the feelings of the hungry patients as they sat and watched nurses eat what was to them a dream of luxury. One afternoon, Dr. Dent was talking to a patient, Mrs. Turney, about some trouble she'd had with a nurse or matron. A short time after, we were taken down to supper, and this woman who had beaten Miss Turney, and of whom Dr. Dent spoke, was sitting at the door of our dining room. Suddenly, Mrs. Turney picked up her bowl of tea and, rushing out of the door, flung it at the woman who had beat her. There was some loud screaming, and Mrs. Turney was returned to her place. The next day, she was transferred to the rope gang, which is supposed to be composed of the most dangerous and most suicidal women on the island. At first, I could not sleep and did not want to so long as I could hear anything new. The night nurses may have complained of the fact. At any rate, one night they came in and tried to make me take a dose of some mixture out of a glass to make me sleep. I told them I would do nothing of the sort, and they left me, I hoped, for the night. My hopes were vain, for in a few minutes they returned with a doctor, the same that received us on our arrival. He insisted that I take it, but I was determined not to lose my wits, even for a few hours. When he saw that I was not to be coaxed, he grew rather rough, and he said he'd wasted too much time with me already, that if I did not take it, he would put it into my arm with a needle. It occurred to me that if he put it into my arm, I could not get rid of it, but if I swallowed it, there was one hope. So I said I would take it. I smelt it, and it smelt like laudanum, and it was a horrible dose. No sooner had they left the room and locked me in, I tried to see how far down my throat my finger would go, and the chloral was allowed to try its effect elsewhere. I want to say that the night nurse, Burns in Hall 6, seemed very kind and patient to the poor, afflicted people. The other nurses made several attempts to talk to me about lovers and asked me if I would not like to have one. They did not find me very communicative on the, to them, popular subject. Once a week, the patients are given a bath, and that is the only time they see soap. A patient handed me a piece of soap one day about the size of a thimble. I considered it a great compliment in her wanting to be kind, but I thought she would appreciate the cheap soap more than I, so I thanked her but refused to take it. On bathing day, the tub is filled with water, and the patients are washed one after the other without a change of water. This is done until water is really thick, and then it is allowed to run out and the tub is refilled without being washed. The same towels are used on all the women, those with eruptions as well as those without. The healthy patients fight for a change of water, but they are compelled to submit to the dictates of the lazy, tyrannical nurses. The dresses are seldom changed, oftener than once a month. If the patient has a visitor, I have seen the nurses hurry her out and change her dress before the visitor comes in. This keeps up the appearance of careful and good management. The patients who are not able to take care of themselves get into beastly conditions, and the nurses never look after them, but order some of the patients to do so. For 5 days, we were compelled to sit in the room all day. I never put in such a long time. Every patient was stiff and sore and tired. We would get in little groups on benches and torture our stomachs by conjuring up thoughts of what we would eat first when we got out. If I'd not known how hungry they were and the pitiful side of it, the conversation would have been very amusing. As it was, it only made me sad. When the subject of eating, which seemed to be the favorite one, was worn out, they used to give their opinions of the institution and its management. The condemnation of the nurses and the eatables was unanimous. As the days passed, Miss Tilly Mayard's condition grew worse. She was continually cold and unable to eat the food provided. Day after day, she sang in order to try to maintain her memory, but at last the nurse made her stop. I talked with her daily, and I grieved to find her grow worse so rapidly. At last, she got a delusion. She thought that I was trying to pass myself off for her, and that all the people who called to see Nellie Brown were friends in search of her, but that I, by some means, was trying to deceive them into the belief that I was the girl. I tried to reason with her, but found it impossible. So I kept away from her as much as possible, lest my presence should make her worse and feed the fancy. One of the patients, Mrs. Cotter, a pretty and delicate woman, one day thought she saw her husband coming up the walk. She left the line in which she was marching and ran to meet him. For this act, she was sent to the retreat. She afterward said, "The remembrance of that is enough to make me mad. For crying, the nurses beat me with a broom handle and jumped on me, injuring me internally so that I shall never get over it. Then they tied my hands and feet, and throwing a sheet over my head, twisted it tightly around my throat so I could not scream, and thus put me in a bathtub filled with cold water. They held me under until I gave up every hope and became senseless. At other times, they took hold of my ears and beat my head on the floor and against the wall. Then they pulled out my hair by the roots so that it will never grow in again." Mrs. Cotter here showed me proofs of her story, the dent in the back of her head and the bare spots where the hair had been taken out by the handful. I give her story as plainly as possible. "My treatment was not as bad as I've seen others get in there," she said, "but it has ruined my health. And even if I do get out of here, I will be a wreck. When my husband heard of the treatment given me, he threatened to expose the place if I was not removed, so I was brought here. I am well mentally now. All that old fear has left me, and the doctor has promised to allow my husband to take me home." I made the acquaintance of Bridget McGinnis, who seems to be sane at the present time. She said she was sent to Retreat 4 and put on the rope gang. The beating I got there, she said, was something dreadful. I was pulled around by the hair, held under the water until I strangled, and I was choked and kicked. The nurses would always keep a quiet patient stationed to the window to tell them when any of the doctors were approaching. It was hopeless to complain to the doctors, for they always said it was the imagination of our diseased brains. And besides, we would get another beating for telling. They would hold patients under the water and threaten to leave them to die if they did not promise not to tell the doctors. We would all promise, because we knew the doctors would not help us, and we would do anything to escape the punishment. After breaking a window, I was transferred to the lodge, the worst place on the island. It is dreadfully dirty in there, and the stench is awful. In the summer, the flies swarm the place. The food is worse than we get in other wards, and we were given only tin plates. Instead of the bars being on the outside, as in this ward, they are on the inside. There are many quiet patients there who have been there for years, but the nurses keep them to do the work. Among other beatings I got there, the nurses jumped on me once and broke two of my ribs. While I was there, a pretty young girl was brought in. She'd been sick, and she fought against being put in that dirty place. One night, the nurses took her hand and, after beating her, held her naked in a cold bath. Then they threw her on her bed. When morning came, the girl was dead. The doctor said she died of convulsions, and that was all that was done about it. They inject so much morphine and chloral that the patients are made crazy. I've seen the patients wild for water from the effects of drugs, and the nurses would refuse it to them. I've heard women beg for a whole night for one drop, and it was not given them. I myself cried for water until my mouth was so parched and dry that I could not speak. I saw the same thing myself in Hall 7. The patients would beg for a drink before retiring, but the nurses, Miss Hart and the others, refused to unlock the bathroom that they might quench their thirst.